Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello, everyone. I hope you're all well. My name is Jasper William Cartwright, and I am so excited to share with you episode one of our brand new Dungeons and Dragons podcast. Now, if you didn't guess it from the title, we are indeed three people of color from around the world who have come together to chat and laugh about this amazing game. We are all DMs and have various levels of experience, so whether you are a seasoned sorcerer looking for new ideas or a fumbling fighter looking to learn the ropes, we have got you. We hope to cover a range of topics in this show, from DM tips and tricks to player advice and hopefully some fun and silly stories along the way. Thank you so much for jumping in with us at the start of our journey. Please get involved, send us your thoughts, your ideas, your questions. We want to hear all of it. So, without further ado, this is Three Black Halflings, a Dungeons & Dragons podcast.
You will come to terms with your own weakness.
Full Prince vibe?
Ooh. Like a beautiful play.
Focus on your tars.
Yeah.
You think this is just a game?
There is no board. The board is hypothetical. I suffer and learn.
We're about to get into something real big now. What? So here we are, episode one. Why don't you guys go ahead and introduce yourselves?
My name is Jeremy Cobb, an actor, an American actor living in London, also British actor actually as well, American and British, dual citizen, living in London. Jasper and I met when we did a play together last year, The Butterfly Lion.
And we did.
Yeah,
and that's when I first got into D&D. So Jeremy introduced me to the mighty world of D&D, and I've come a long way since then. I think every like day I spend now,
like a beautiful plague, I infected nearly the entire cast and crew of that show. Yeah.
It was very good. It was very good. And we also have
My name is Leando Nati Lewis Nyao, but people call me Onati. I am also an actor, and I used to do a lot of voice acting for video games and stuff, which I really enjoy. I went to Central with Jasper.
Represent.
Nice.
Yeah, and did drama at school there. And I was infected by the plague that is Dungeons and Dragons about 6 months ago. And then it kind of fizzled out. And because I'm a type A personality, once I was in, I just bought almost every module. I'm reading everything ferociously. I've got 18 sets of dice. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about
to
get another roll tray. I'm in.
One for each NPC.
That's the one.
Oh, set for each NPC. Yeah.
And then you've got to have a separate one to your characters. We all know that we've all been there,
of course.
For sure.
Yeah.
Lovely. So, Unati and Jeremy here with me. Super, super excited to dive in today. Just a little disclaimer at the top of the show. We are just three nerds with really strong opinions and even stronger charisma scores, which means we like to shout and get excited about stuff. But ultimately, we're here to have a conversation and a discussion about this wonderful game that we love. So please, if you are listening and you have an opinion, please share it with us. We'd love to talk to you guys. I think we'd all feel very proud if any kind of community was born out of this. But if you do
Absolutely.
Share, if you do share something, I just ask you, we ask you to be nice, spread love. It's just a game, even though it is the best game, and there is no arguing that.
You think this is just a game?
Yeah, I knew. I can already feel the hate coming for me saying it's just a game. Already ridiculous. So let's dive into the show. Basically, the premise of this show is we all run games, we are all DMs, and we wanted to share some of our experiences and the joys we have had of playing this amazing game. We're hopefully going to get into throwing out some DM tips and advice, but this week, and potentially for the first few weeks, because there's so much to discuss here, we really wanted to talk about black and minority groups in Dungeons & Dragons. There is no secret that a lot of Dungeons & Dragons is based on very Eurocentric Eurocentric white culture with like things like Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones. And so we really wanted to talk and dive in to what would it be like, what would a world be like if we explored the wonderful world of Africa and Asia and all these other wonderful resources and rich histories. So what better way to start than with some of our own personal experiences before we dive into some questions? If we can dive in, the name for our show currently, or at least when it started, was me and Jeremy. It was going to be called Two Black Halflings. This could change, who knows? And I guess I'd love for Jeremy to share his the reason why he came up with this name, or we came up with this name, and just what your experiences, Jeremy, have been of being a big black in Dungeons & Dragons, in this crazy, wacky world that we play in.
All right. I believe the inspiration for the name came from back when I was creating a character for the game that you run, Jasper. Mm-hmm. I think it was like the first big game that you've run.
Oh yeah, 100%. I've only run a one shot with my girlfriend before this point. Okay. So.
There you go.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and so I had played in a few campaigns up until that point, but I realized around that time that none of my characters had ever been explicitly coded black. I am black myself, but none of my characters, even if they were, I didn't think of them like, this guy's black. And there was nothing identifiably black in their descriptions, and so I was like, okay, I want to play somebody who's black this time. And not just, like, kind of black, but, like, unmistakably black. Because I was also thinking, like, none of the characters I see in any of the campaigns that I play are explicitly black. And so I decided to create a black halfling character named Dennis Colespring, the Ghostwise Killer, named after Ghostface Killer from the Wu-Tang Clan.
Every time I hear that name.
In fact, the Wu-Tang Clan is actually the name of the clan that my halfling monk comes from.
And I have to, even now, I'm still having to come up with reasons as to why the Wu-Tang Clan is in the middle of this wonderful, ethereal world that I've created. It's marvelous.
Yeah, and I have a pet owl named Snoop. I think she's smart enough that we're just
and
friends.
And also, we should definitely explain.
And she has an afro.
She does have an afro.
Oh, yes,
we should definitely explain as well that we decided early on that Dennis would have a huge afro. I said, well, listen, that's going to give you disadvantage on some stealth checks. And so what we decided is he has a do-rag of holding, which allows him to store items and his entire afro in a subplane whilst he's wearing it, therefore not giving him disadvantage on stealth throws. Which, you know, again, I think this is the sort of thing that we loved creating and just feels very unique, you know?
Yeah. And monks have an ability called slow fall where you can just reduce fall damage. So whenever I use that, it's me taking off the do-rag and this huge parachute afro just and slowing my descent as I fall. Well, anyway, as I was creating Dennis and coming up with the ideas for him, I was looking up images for inspiration online. And I was trying to find, like, okay, let's see if I can find some cool black halfling monks on here. And I couldn't find any at all. And so I was like, okay, so maybe not black halfling monks. There are halfling monks, but maybe not black halfling monks so far. I get it. Okay, let's scale it back and just look for, like, a black halfling. And then still could not find anything. This would have been, August of last year, I think? August of 2019? And couldn't find a single image. The only image that I could find of any black halfling at all was of a really, really obscure subrace. I don't even remember the name of it, that exists in some distant plane, and it's just like a really grainy black and white image of like one or two black people just like, ooh, just kind of looking, and that's about it. They live way over there. Nobody talks about them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, this is ridiculous. Like, you're telling me I can't find a single image anywhere? Mm-hmm. And that was what originally had gotten me kind of, had rustled my jimmies over the issue. And was it Jade specifically who came up with the name itself?
Yeah, Jasper? Yeah, it actually was, yeah. She because I explained the story to Jade, my partner, and she said, she was like, oh, well, you know, you're two black guys, you should be called two black halflings. which then had all the connotations and all the thought, got my sort of wheels churning about Lord of the Rings, and imagine if it was like, you know, someone who looked like me and Jeremy going to Mount Doom and throwing the ring in, and you know, I think it would have been an amazing thing, and I think probably would have changed the course of fantasy forever, because I think that's still Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, and you know, if they remake it, maybe just like very people who very literally look like me and Jasper cast in the movie.
That would be fun.
By which I mean me and Jasper cast in the movie.
That's the one. Amazing. Thank you for that, Jeremy. I would love to, Unati, I'd love to talk to you quickly. I know that you DM and play, but very differently to me and Jeremy, we run mostly homebrew settings.
Yeah.
How do you find modules are for diversity and inclusion? And is it something that you've struggled with or something that you've actually found works quite well?
I mean, it's always kind of difficult to sort of bring in inclusion. But I also find because a lot of the games I run, all the players are black, generally. So it's almost secondary because as I'm imagining the characters, I'm just imagining three black dudes and two black girls walking around, you know, like Baldur's Gate or something.
Nice.
So that's already there. But like, it was quite interesting, actually, like over the last 2 weeks during all the protests and stuff, especially because I've recently been running Descent into Avernus in Baldur's Gate. And I was trying to colour in the world for them and just make it clear. And I found myself speaking about a very brutal police force, like beating people in the streets brutally. Characters do nothing about it. And because at the disclaimer at the top of it, like, you kind of have to set up that the characters are used to seeing this kind of stuff and they're desensitized to it. Then we had to have like a little mini inserted session, like 0.2.0, kind of going like, is everyone still okay for me to run this? And I had to like take a step back and go like, this is very, from a Eurocentric perspective, fine, you're just talking about a fictional world, right? But from an Afrocentric perspective, you're talking about very real, practical fears and concerns that we may have. So in terms of running modules and finding diversity for my characters in there, it's been really, really tough. Whenever I introduce new people of color to the game, the first thing they'll always say, and pardon me, is that white people shit? Like, that's the first thing that they'll say. And then when they start to play, they're absolutely in, because it's the greatest game in the world, right?
Absolutely.
It's just interesting that that an entire group of peoples have not been considered in the world building. When it comes to like the NPCs and stuff, I just throw in flavor. Like, I'll just change it. I'm going to change her, and she's going to have a big fro, and she's going to be, you know, have a southern drawl and serve biscuits in her tavern. And I'll just mess it up and try and make it more interesting that way.
Yeah, marvelous. I think this is actually, you've actually touched on something which I was going to bring up later, but I think we should bring it forward. I think one of the things that I was really interested in sharing is any advice you guys would have to, especially like white DMs, to include more diversity and inclusion in their games, because I think that's quite a difficult line. But I think that, you know, as a DM, I want everyone to feel included, and especially if I'm running a game, even with like someone of an Asian descent, perhaps, that's something that I would still really want to feel like they can be included. So what would you guys say, what advice would you guys give, other than just obviously doing your research and not being, you know, not trying not to be sort of overtly stereotypical, but other than that, what would you say is the what advice would you guys give for getting more diversity and inclusion into your games?
I suppose for me, like, what I kind of encourage usually, like, especially with some newer players, I tend to tell them like, try and avoid the internet as much as possible.
Sure.
And I will give them the player's handbook in a PDF format. I'll send all of that stuff out to them, and other variations on characters and classes and races, whatever. And then I have to have a disclaimer discussion and be like, you have to think of it as species, not race, because that word is quite tenuous for me as well.
Sure.
But that's kind of what I do, is I just say, like, let your imagination run wild. It doesn't matter. Like, the first rule is that it doesn't matter. I don't care. I'll figure it out. Like, don't worry about making something that fits in a fantasy kind of setting. Just make what you make, and then we'll sit down and fine tune together. And I'm cool with it. And then I'm going to figure out how to make it work.
Yeah, I love this. I love this so much. I think that our top advice for the podcast so far is going to be avoid the internet at all costs. I think that's probably like a good rule of thumb generally. But no, I think that's a really, I think that's a really fascinating point that you've just touched on there about allowing players and as a DM, giving yourself permission to really be inventive and to really find something new and nuanced. Because I think some of my best moments are when I'm collaborating with other people and I've just allowed them to just go off the rails and just see what happens. And I think that potentially you're right in that. The only time I feel like I would, or the only thing I warn a sort of new DM against, I say that like I'm not a new DM, I'm so new and so fresh to this. But you know, but the only thing I would say is that don't be too prescriptive. Don't try and force something into a hole that's like potentially not there, you know? Like you can, and just be free with it. Like I, my favorite thing always is running, like making all of my cities as like diverse as possible so that the players really get a sense of like, I kind of feel like I'd really like to find someone like this because I feel like, you know, like, and I go, well, yeah, of course there'd be a person like that here. And I think that even just that way of just allowing your cities to be multicultural, well-traveled, a real amalgamation of people. And then you can, I think if you then play it like that, then you can go into those towns and those villages, which maybe they do have slightly more problematic views and, you know, things that the players can then, it can then challenge them with. But I find cities are really helpful as a setting. I would encourage cities. I think they're just a great way to introduce the players to a broad spectrum of kind of people and to allow the players to find out where their morality lies in a lot of these kinds of things. Like you were saying about seeing things like police brutality or whatever, it allows them to kind of go, how does my character feel about that? And not even sometimes, how do I feel about that? How does my character feel about that? Because that's a big thing I think that people forget. It's like, we're here to play a game. These are characters. You know, me as the, as the DM, I am playing like 1,000 characters right now. Literally, I'm populating this world in my brain. You know, so there's always going to be difference of opinion. And, and that's okay. And I think we shouldn't shy away from that. We shouldn't be like, oh, no, that's a problematic view, so we can't, we can explore it. I think it's important.
That was, I would say for me, similar to you, Unati, it's like I try to tell people just come up with what you want to come up with. And I want to sit there with them and we'll develop it together. Especially for me, since I don't start with a module, I usually build the world out of what the players bring. So like they'll say, I want to come from this kind of a culture. I want to come from a mountain Minotaur clan, or I want to come from up north, and I was raised by wolves, and I want to come from the Feywild, and I came here because my family worshipped a crazy evil god, and I ran away, and like we then we'll build everything out of that, and I'll create more of the world based like in response to what they give me usually. And for like that's the only time actually. The only time I didn't fully do that was the one time that I explicitly tried to have an Africa-based setting for a game. And it was also the one time that it completely backfired because, like, half of the players did not buy into it at all. Half of them were like, yeah, and the other half were like, nah. Like, we had a character named Umbasa, and then there was a character named Amanda Peg. and it was like this, and then there's another dude named Sai Sahan, and then another guy named Walter. And I was like, what, but, okay. Like, I don't know. This is quite good.
I think you're touching on the right thing there when you're saying about buying into something. And I think that that's what I really enjoy about playing this game is that it's a collective world. Players, I always find, forget how much they contribute to the world when they play it. Just because they are, you know, they're the center of the story. They flavor everything, every interaction with every NPC. And I think you're absolutely right. Having them buy into a world kind of really eliminates a lot of the question marks for me as a DM. And especially that sensitivity question that I sort of brought up was, is that I get to know what kind of campaign my players are ready for or want to play. Because I listen to them and say, like, okay, how did you feel about this? How do you feel about that? And I think that you touched on it as well, Unati, like, about sitting down and saying, oh, are we okay with me running this? You know, is this okay? So I think dialogue for sure, giving your players freedom, start with some nice multicultural vibrant cities. They're always fun. Definitely to play with those.
Yeah. I actually was wondering, I haven't played a whole lot of official material, but I usually get the sense that the way the game is written tends to be, societies tend to be more racially homogenized, and you don't usually get a mishmash of stuff. And it also seems like the way the game is written, you tend to have strong stereotypes about character races. Yeah. And it's not even just like other people hold stereotypes, it's the DM will play them stereotypically a certain way. Like goblins and kobolds and orcs tend to always have the same kind of a culture. And as a DM, I always veered hard away from that. In part, I think, because the idea of having a bunch of racial stereotypes that are just apparently true for no reason other than just these people are all really dumb and really savage, as a black person, made me very uncomfortable.
There's a lot of nodding going on right now on the Zoom. You can't see this at home. Yeah, we're all like,
I wish you could hear the nodding.
From now on, we'll vocalize nodding on the show, guys.
And actually, one thing that I did try to do was I tried to kind of leverage that to create some emotional complexity, or moral complexity at least, in some of the situations. So one of the early things that I tried was, there was a player in my campaign who was a Duergar dwarf. We called them Dwergars because we had never heard anybody say it out loud, but apparently it's pronounced Duergar. But they're a group, for those of you who don't know, they're a group of dwarves who delved too deep underground and like hundreds and hundreds of years ago or thousands of years ago and accidentally came into contact with the Mind Flayers and were enslaved by the Mind Flayers. The rest of the dwarves were like, nope, sorry, bye, and left them. They were taken deep underground and spent like thousands of years in slavery to the Mind Flayers to the point where their physiology and entire mindset was changed through like years of torture and experimentation and everything. And eventually they overthrew the Mind Flayers and they fled. The Mind Flayers fled, but now they live underground and they're this group of really like angry, hateful slavers. And I found it really interesting that to try and explore their perspective and say like, okay, what they are currently doing is obviously bad. They're enslaving people and they're a bunch of murderers, but they are also victims of an oppression that has shaped their people, and they were abandoned by all of the other dwarves, and they're basically hated by they live in a horrible environment under the ground where everybody hates everybody. So in some way their current behavior is like a defense mechanism against what it's like a reaction to how they were treated. And at the same time, I also had them all have Southern American accents, so that they would to follow the slavery theme. They all had Southern American accents, it ended up creating some interesting moral conversations.
I think that's really fascinating, and leads us really well onto the next question, actually, that I had written down here, which was that my personal belief is that D&D is an incredible tool for like educating people about diversity through a fun and engaging lens. I think through a way that allows you to actively make decisions which you wouldn't get to make on such a scale in real life. The reason I brought this question up, and I think you've illustrated a really fantastic point there, is that my ear was first tweaked to this. I was listening to Matthew Mercer talk about Critical Role Campaign 2, and how he said that he, from the outset, this was one of his main missions of the campaign, was to basically play around and subverting these species, and seeing what kind of different things could arise from it. So in the new Explorer's Guide to Wildemount book, there is a very smart race of orcs, which I thought was amazing. And spoiler alert for campaign two, but there is the drow in the book are not evil. You know, they are they're not all bad. They are complicated and flawed, just like their sort of human counterparts in the Empire side. And I thought that is a really fascinating way of educating people in a very kind of engaging way about how stereotypes play a really a really huge fundamental part of society. So, yeah, I'd just be interested to know if you guys have had any thoughts or have any thoughts about, engaging people in diversity. Obviously, we've heard from you there, Jeremy, about what you've done in your campaign. Is there anything that springs to mind with you, Unati?
Yeah, I think, I guess, because I tend to run modules and because I'm sort of fairly new to this and I don't really get bogged down in a lot of the sort of Reddits and subreddits and like groups of like nerds on forums going about things, and
sure.
I don't become my own rules lawyer as well, like I don't sit around and go, oh, I don't box myself into anything. So when it comes to sort of looking at a module and trying to be as diverse as possible, I just play them as diverse individuals. Like you said, like looking at cities, I just go, well, yeah, he's elven, but you know, and he's elven, but he might be really, really stupid. And I encourage my characters to do that. I always encourage them to give themselves like a clear, simple flaw, or to subvert their class, or to subvert their race or species rather slightly, because I think it just makes for far more interesting play. Like if you're just playing like a straight high elf, sorcerer,
paladin,
like,
or something, yeah, it's like
really
super moral, you know.
Like,
No one wants to play Elrond. He is a boring character. Like this guy's, we must do this. It's our only chance.
I don't think either of you guys have seen it, but you have seen it, Jasper. In Escape from Bloodkeep,
yes.
The Dimension 20 thing. The Elrond character is called Tellarmine the Calm, I think.
Yeah.
And at one point, I think the players start referring to him as Lord Xanax. Because of how dull he is.
He is so dull. But I think you're absolutely right. I think that, again, that was what I loved about listening to... it was a really interesting talk. I encourage everyone to go listen to it. It's the Brendan Lee Mulligan and Matthew Mercer are talking about just a campaign setting in Adventuring Academy on Dimension 20. It was just really fascinating to hear them talking about the way to get around a lot of these things is making complicated and flawed NPCs and characters. Mm. Don't allow yourself to just get into a place where you're just making two-dimensional people, because then either way, that's going to be like offensive to someone. Do you know what I mean? Or it's going to alienate someone. And I think the last thing we want as DMs is to alienate someone at the table, because that's the absolute opposite of what you want to do.
Also, I would add on to that. I would say never allow your diverse characters to be defined simply by the thing that makes them diverse. So whether that's like racial in terms of dark skin, light skin, or in terms of, you know, orc, goblin, or in terms of, say, you're drawing from another country or culture, like say you're drawing from Asian culture, it should not be that these are the Asian people, and that's the only thing that matters about them. They should just be people, and then there are some different cultural, you know, we can look at the cultural differences, but that should not be the defining factor.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, listen, I wanted to get on to some really fun topics now. for those of you listening at home, maybe I'll include a link. I don't know how this is going to work yet. We're all very new, so apologies if any of the technical aspects of this aren't up to scratch yet. But what I would like to do is include a link to a Pinterest board that I've made, which has some incredible black art on it. I literally spent last night just freaking out looking at some of these beautiful images. So I'd encourage you guys, Unati, Jeremy, I'm going to do it myself as well, going to get this Pinterest board up. And just what I would love to do is just have a little talk, if just unashamed, a bit of imaginating, like what imagining what would be, what kind of setting, if you had to come up with an Afrocentric setting, what would it be? Or maybe like an Afrocentric class. I would just love to hear you guys throw some ideas out. Maybe this is going to be the setting for a future campaign. I feel like there's going to be a campaign born out of this podcast for sure. but I'd love to hear, just looking at some of these incredible images, some of the things I've never seen before. Like there's a black dwarf on this Pinterest board, which blew my mind. He has got this incredible, like white long beard and this heavy crossbow. I mean, it really is. It's incredible. I'm going to absolutely have to ask or try and track down some of these artists, because they've done some really amazing work.
Yeah.
Whichever one of you guys wants to jump in, I know I've got ideas and thoughts, but I'd love to hear what you guys
Well,
have
right
to
off the bat, I really like that two of the ladies at the top both appear to have vitiligo, which is like something you don't normally see. You don't. It looks really cool.
Yeah.
Like it's. I think it's a nice way to include a sense of diversity into it. And I also love the lady walking next to the lion. That's also really cool.
Yes. Yeah. There's this incredible image. I'll just try and describe it as much as possible what we're looking at. There's an incredible image of this sort of very strong looking African woman in this beautiful, like, flowing blue cape with this gigantic lion behind her with this, like, almost like it's almost like a little bandana
a matching,
around the lion's neck, a little blue bandana.
Yeah.
A little matching blue bandana, and it is just like, oh man, like there's nothing more kind of like essentially powerful than that image. It really is incredible. For me, this is the big one. For me, I am obsessed and would love to run like a full Wakanda campaign. I was obsessed with Black Panther when it came out. I absolutely loved it. The music, the vibrancy, just even things like the music within like the fantasy realms. Like, I want to hear more drums. I want to hear more beats. These things have existed for so long. And like, and even when I run campaigns, even when I run my own campaigns, I'm still guilty of just looping it up every single time we go into a new town, you know, and it's just like, do you know what I mean? It's, and like, no, I want to hear some full, like, you know, and one of my favorite images on this, if you sort of scroll down a bit, there is this incredible black elf character with these, he's got a full high top.
Oh, yeah, that guy. I love that guy.
So sick.
Sharp features, you know, and it's, and I was just, and in my head, I'm just picturing this full Wakandan Rivendell setting where we've got these elves walking around, really like still keeping that like high-minded sense of elves. It's all about beauty. It's all about like extravagance for them, beautiful finishes to their houses, and just seeing like these rich like purples and just like colors that we don't normally associate with that kind of like fantasy color palette, I think would be really fascinating. And then the last one I'm going to throw out is the, you sent a link, Jeremy, to a fantasy campaign, and someone had come up with a class. It was a mask maker. And I was just like, that is so cool. Like, I always, whenever I go on holiday abroad, I always used to, as a kid, be fascinated by collecting masks, like tribal masks and things. I thought they were just so beautiful and told such incredible stories. And I just think, I love the idea of a sort of almost like a, I don't know what it would be, like an artificer sort of crossed with a, maybe like a bit of a druid
and
in there
as well.
Because
there's an artistic
sort of a shape
element to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just like being able to like literally like use these masks, you know, this mask of many faces type thing, and to transform themselves or their abilities or, you know, like different resistances maybe when they're wearing certain masks and stuff like that, I feel like would be a really cool thing to explore. I'm definitely going to have to find a way of putting this Pinterest, I think, on the link. People need to see these images. They are
incredible.
I sent a few in the chat, the Facebook chat as well.
Amazing. I'll add some more. And again, if anyone is listening, if they, you know, the four people that are listening to this first episode, if you guys do have anything that you'd love to share or contribute, please do. We want to see it and ingest it all. We really want to give back to the community as well. So if you know any minority artists, musicians, that kind of thing, please reach out, because if we do end up getting a platform with this thing, that is the number one priority, especially for me, is to really share the kind of the breadth of talent that is out there. Yunati, I would love to talk to you because you had said that you always play tieflings for a particular reason, and there is the most amazing clearly black inspired tiefling on this Pinterest board, who's going full prints on us right now, and
it is
so beautiful.
I love it.
I'd love to hear why you play tieflings, why you're drawn to them. Just talk to us about that.
I mean, so it sort of comes from when you're kind of like you're doing your first little deep dive into your player's handbook, and you're reading about all the different races or species rather. It just struck me that they're a subjugated, put upon, looked down upon class of people by virtue of how they look. mm-hmm. and a bloodline that has been sullied, yes, by some stupid, foolish actions back in the day. but however, no matter if they have a good alignment, sometimes I play a tiefling with a lawful good alignment, which I find really difficult because a lot of their abilities are kind of geared to bulking up things that are rather mm-hmm. sneaky mm-hmm. Or kind of deceptive mm. or manipulative. But I enjoy playing them because I relate to them the hardest. And usually when I come into games, everyone kind of goes, oh, here's our edgelord. And I'm like, hang on. Like, can you not see the correlation as to why myself as a woman of color would want mm-hmm. to play a tiefling? Because I relate to their internal mm-hmm. struggle.
Absolutely. Yeah, do you know what? It's actually really funny. I think it's really funny you say that. I've naturally made this connection before, but my first ever D&D character, which was in your mm-hmm. game, Jeremy, I played a rogue. It was a Genasi rogue. And I actually think one of the main reasons I think I was drawn to that that species in the first place was because they had a very distinct, different color of their coloration mm-hmm. of their skin. And I just connected with it. And I just was like, that's kind of cool. I love the idea that I look super human, super normal, but I got blue skin because I'm an air genasi. You know, like, that's really cool. And I've literally just made that connection in my head now of like, oh, that's probably why I was drawn to that species in the first place, in the same way that you probably just inherently drawn to tieflings because you share a commonality with them.
Jumping into that, my first two characters, the first character I ever played was a deep gnome, who again, deep gnomes look different. They're not coated white as much because they all have gray skin. They're kind of, the language is kind of Scandinavian-ish, but that was one thing. And then the next character I ever played was a changeling, which could look like anything. Mm. And I distinctly remember liking that the gnome didn't look like all the other gnomes, and liking that the changeling could be whatever it wanted to be, whatever it needed to be.
I was just thinking, one of our aims with this show is that we'd love to move the needle a little bit on making people feel more comfortable to branch out into any species or any class and find commonality and find the links with them.
I'm now inspired to create my own setting, but if I wanted to make my own setting, it would be based on the Mfetane, which translates to the crushing. When Shaka Zulu chased Mzilikazi, his next legal heir, out of KwaZulu-Natal all the way up into Zimbabwe, what is now known as Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. And that's why today people who speak Zulu and in KwaZulu-Natal and in Ndebele in Zimbabwe, our languages are actually identical. They're the same. I would really like to look at that because there's also witchcraft involved is a massive thing in African cultures. We've got dark magics and good and light magics. Amakwicha are dark, are sort of dark witches. And what's the other term? Amakwicha namasangoma. Are more sort of like I would link them to more sort of ethereal, chaotic good.
Kind of nice.
So and then obviously there's a whole bunch of other possibilities and races and classes and features and abilities all up in there. Not just like getting creative about it, but I think as a tool to like educate people about diversity as well and about sort of segments of history that they might not necessarily know about. Even though this is fantasy, you can absolutely infuse it with the historical.
That's what I think D&D is. That's what sort of, you know, my point about it being white Eurocentric. I think so much of D&D and so much of things like Game of Thrones is historical, is rooted in history and in historical events. If you ever make that campaign, Unati, I will take it as a personal affront if I am not included as a player character.
I was going to say, can I jump in there? It sounds like it would be really fun.
I think I'm inspired, guys. You've done it.
Inspired. We've done it. We've got one person involved. Yeah. That's it. That's all we need now. We can stop the show. This is it. This is the show, guys. This is it now. It's over. We're out.
My own
a very successful pilot. We accomplished our ultimate goal.
But But fully, this is, I mean, this is, you know, this is going to sound, this is going to get a little deep for a D&D show, but I think we can. I think there's a scope for this. You know, my family, my father, who I don't have any real contact with, he's from Zimbabwe. And I feel like I've just learned from you in the last 30 seconds more about Zimbabwean culture than I ever knew. Not because I haven't sort of tried. Yeah. It's just, it's a very daunting thing.
It's a daunting task. Do you know what your totem is?
Yeah, yeah. To kind of educate yourself. And what was that? Sorry? I think I missed that.
Do you know what your totem is?
No, I have no idea. I don't even know what a totem is. Yeah.
Do you know if you tell me your last name, I'll ask around my Zimbabwean friends and we'll find out what your totem is.
Each clan
in Zimbabwe has an animal totem.
Oh my god, amazing. Okay, so my father's last name and family name is McKee.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
McKee and Yasley. Yeah, I'll have to ask because I don't speak Shona. Send me a text at one of these days and just say it for me and I'll find out what your totem is.
Oh my god, this is amazing. I love this. I love this so much. And again, please, like, if there's other people listening who are interested in this stuff, who have ideas about this stuff, share. I can't stress it enough that this is about community more than anything else, because D&D is like, it's the best community in the world. You know, I think this is one of those, it's one of the fandoms where I think everyone has like their own little areas that they like to be in, and I really kind of, I think everyone has a conversation and a commonality which I really enjoy. You've got your hardcore rule nerds over in the corner, like I'm looking at you, Jeremy. This guy, he loves them rules. You know, he busts my balls every time we play. He'll be there going, oh, but I think you'll find he actually already used three legendary reactions this turn. I'm like, God, I'm a
proud rules lawyer on behalf of the players. That is not against the players. I'm pro player, including when I DM.
But I would also like to say this, which is that as a DM, I think, and I would like to start a campaign right here, right now, which is hashtag ban the monk, because it is the most infuriating class in the world for the DM. I really enjoy playing with single enemies, encounters, like really strong single enemies, because I think it's just really cool when you've got like one bad guy just fending off like six NPCs, like PCs or whatever. It's just awesome. And it's easier to run as the thing. But when you have a character like a monk who has a high spell, like DC,
high save DC,
that's what I'm looking for.
That stunning strike.
Who just stuns your character every time, and you just have to sit there for a round whilst the PCs just wail on this guy.
It's a thing.
So hashtag
it's a thing
ban
of
the
beauty,
monk.
Folks. It's a thing
it's
of beauty.
It's officially a thing.
Anti-monk persecution is alive and well here. You've heard it here, folks.
Yeah, here in this. Yeah.
No, I love it. I love it when my characters do that to me, though. I mean, like, monks they really do irritate me, but I really do enjoy that moment where you've planned out something. You're like, this is going to be.
And then immediately.
And then in one round, like, just decimate. That, you're like,
yeah, absolutely.
That, wow. I made sure that I stacked this correctly. Like,
there was a climactic battle in one of my main campaigns, and there was this were-creature, crazy magic powers. She was currently turned into a bear at the moment, and, like, was attacking, and the barbarian ran up the side of a cliff, hit her. He's a barbarian paladin, critted on a smite, first attack. Jeez. Then he hit her again. And then he had haste cast on him, and with his hasted action, threw her off the cliff. Because he's a Minotaur barbarian, and he's just that strong. in a single turn. Wow. It was just like,
Well,
That's the end of the session, folks.
Yeah, that's all I had planned. I thought that would take at least 3 hours, so cheers.
I was looking through her spell list, like, is there anything she can... Nope.
Like, nope, she got nothing.
You just see her transform,
like,
and
some
just,
of the,
and she falls away. That's it.
Just straight up. And I love the moment as well as a DM when you sit there and you go, okay, here we go. We're about to get into something real big now. Hope you're ready. Hope you're... Oh, no, stop, stop, stop. Ah! Okay, so let me just, I'm just going to go through my notes real quick, see what else I have. My favorite one is always, cool, so I'm going to loot the body.
I hate that.
There is,
Do they have any magical 36 items?
36 pieces of gold.
On this random bed?
Yeah, for sure. My favorite as well is always, that magical glaive they had. I'm like, oh. So powerful, I can't give them that. It disappeared, guys, when the creature died.
Like, it just vanished, like you can't have
yeah,
that.
It was actually a pact weapon for that fighter. That maybe
they were a warlock, as it turns out.
They had one level of warlock. At which point Jeremy would jump in and be like, "Actually, I think you'll find the pact weapon is only unlocked at level 3 of warlock." But yeah, I think this brings us on to what I was going to say. It's just about some just straight up DM fails and mishaps, because I think these are always fun. And I think part of the reason for this is that I wanted to give players and DMs alike a little place to share these kind of wacky moments where things just completely go out the window. My attention is immediately drawn to the recent campaign that Jeremy was a part of. We are in this city. It's called Thunder Lagoon. There's all this mystery and intrigue, and the players have got to go investigate this group of people called the Enclave of the Old Salt, and figure out kind of what's happening. And they've heard a magical item is coming into port in but an hour's time. And in my head, I've got this full thing planned out about how they're going to move this item through the city and where players could potentially intervene or whatever. And the players straight up, they were kind of angry at the Old Salt for various reasons. And they just straight up went, let's go find this boat whilst it's still out, whilst it's coming in. So we can surprise it, ambush it. And I was like, I did not plan the boat at all. Oh my God.
There is no boat. The boat.
There is no boat. The boat does not exist. And so you sit there and I probably planned this session for a good like 2 hours, and you sit there and you go, why do I even try? This is just, it's not possible. And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, guys, why don't you just go over that plan one more time? I'm just going to sit here and just get a name generator up and so I can list off all the names of these pirates that are going to be on board this boat. And this is what's hilarious. Some of the best stuff happened. We had incredible character moments. There was nearly a PC like fight.
It's true.
Turned
into full PvP.
Started fighting each other. And one of the captain of that boat ended up becoming like a character that stayed in the campaign for like a good 3 sessions. So awesome. That was a real fun one for me, of like a total moment of blind panic and just being like, okay, time to pull something out of somewhere because we're going to this boat right now. And it's my own fault for giving them a creature that could swim at ridiculously fast pace. DM decisions always come back to bite you for sure. But yeah, if you guys have anything, I'd love to hear if you've got any crazy things like that where you're like, what?
Nati, do you want to go first or should I jump in there?
You jump in. I'm trying to think through like a couple of my one shots here.
Okay.
Not crazy things that happened.
Here's one. I got one that leads into another. So one of them I mentioned. There's an elf in my campaign who's an Eladrin, comes from the Feywild. She has a whole falling out with her family. They were trying to hunt her down. Through a series of things, they figured out where she was on the Prime Material Plane. In this big climactic battle, that was unrelated to this situation. They sent her brother through, who's a paladin, to come fight her. He's got, like, all these legendary or very rare quality items. Like, he's come fully kitted out to just, like, deal justice. And one of the players had previously gotten his brain eaten by an intellect devourer that was, like, possessing his body. And the intellect devourer saw this guy show up and was like, it clicked in his mind, like, that guy's stronger than the guy I currently have, and managed to successfully use its mind powers to reduce the guy's HP to zero, or sorry, not his HP, his intelligence to zero, and then eat his brain. And while that was happening, the party managed to take his wings. It was like a really high-level flying, like a high-level ability, or it's not a high-level ability, it's a high-level item that allows you to fly for up to an hour. They took a couple of other, they took the cubic gate, which is like a legendary item that allows you basically to jump to any one of six planes.
They took nothing so many things. Teleport spell.
And this guy managed to escape. This guy managed to escape back into the Feywild with the thing in his brain. But from then on, I was living in desperate fear because I realized they could teleport anywhere.
Anywhere.
And I would have, I would spend so long planning because I had to plan literally every place.
Six planes at least, anything. Minimum. And six planes of existence plus everything else. Like you got to consider, like, how does time move in this plane? Like, there's so many things to try, and, like, giving players teleportation is possibly, like, the one...
It is.
I have avoided it like the plague. I have just about allowed my players to get a teleportation circle, and I'm like, but you could only travel in between teleportation circles. Yeah. Don't even think about going anywhere.
Yeah, there's a reason, trying to go there's anywhere a reason else. That stuff is endgame ability, and it's not just because it's powerful to the players, it's so the DM doesn't have to try and write all that stuff at level 3.
And
then that led into a later thing where they were trying to go into a castle. Now, the player who got this item, the cubic gate, just completely forgot that she had it for, like, the next 10 to 15 sessions. And at one point I had a character, like, borrow it and to examine it, so I'm like, okay, buy myself some more time. Well, she's just gotten it back, they're about to infiltrate this castle, and one of the, they are doing this whole, like, windy thing through the castle, hiding in different spots, people know they're there, and one of the players, I had this huge battle planned out in, like, the throne room of this place. There was gonna be a bunch of, like, high-level champion characters, a bunch of, like, a hill giant, a bunch of powerful lycanthropes in there. It was gonna be nuts. And then they decided to use the cubic gate for literally the first time to not only destroy the only teleportation circle that existed in the castle so that no one could get reinforcements, but then they teleported into the throne room and completely defused the situation in a single round. A single round completely just diffused the whole thing. I was mostly just impressed, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it worked out in the end because one of the NPCs they didn't know was actually a bad guy and fully, like, pickpocketed the cubic gate, turned on them, and left.
Nice. I love that. Recover as a DM.
Yeah.
You were just like, do you know what? No, this was too much. I'm taking this away from you right now. It's like when you give the kid a rock and realize the kid is, like, going to throw it through a window. And you're like, no, I need to take this away from you now. This was too much. This was too powerful.
Power.
You're not ready for the rock yet. Like,
yeah.
I love that.
I guess you guys are very generous because I usually don't really run into, like, a lot of trouble with my characters. I usually feel very sorry for them dying because I just don't give them anything. I'm a very stingy DM. I'm like,
okay, cool, nice.
Until you are past level 5, you are just going to struggle.
Yes!
You are just going to struggle. You're going to be human and you're going to
Like you are going to realize what fear is, guys.
Exactly. For me, like, level 1 to, like, 3-4 is, like, humble thyself.
Yes.
You are not gods yet. And then you will earn it. And then you will feel like gods. And then I will sweat.
This is preach. I love this.
I actually had a very for these poor characters.
It's funny actually you say that. I play with some of my drama school friends. So it's basically, I call it my chaos group because they trained actors, and we always have a great laugh together, and they just want to do whatever's funniest in the moment. But because of that, I find it easier to punish them as a group. With my other group, I find it really hard because they play the game really well, and I'm like, I don't want to be an asshole right now. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to be horrible to you for no reason. Yeah. But with this group, I'm like, oh. So literally last game we had, there was a giant army crossing the plain. I mean, I'm talking like, I literally described it, I think, as like over 10,000 troops marching to, like, war right now. So this is heightened state of tension. literally, I wrote one sentence which said, this is there to give the players a sense of scale. And what did these guys do? They decided they wanted to try and get cut across the army so they could carry on going where they were going because they didn't want to be held up. And when they got there, one of them cast disguise self on himself, and they started talking to this general, and the other one decided he wanted to try and pants him. Now, if you know anything about disguise self, it's literally an illusion, so your hands would literally go through the illusion in order to try and do something. So this guard immediately spots this and just goes, well, I'm arresting all of you. And like, and like, they nearly died because of that encounter. Like, and because there was literally like 10,000 troops. They would have absolutely died if they tried to defend themselves.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I find it easier to punish them as a group because they take the mick so often.
Mm-hmm.
But I end up being very, very nervous for them whenever we're in a combat because they're very new and very fresh to this. And sometimes I'm like, oh, you guys are with a cleric who has our friend Abe,
yeah,
who you could probably only describe him as chaotic, like the purest form of chaotic.
Yeah.
And he's playing the cleric in the group and he has no idea what his spells do. And so the cleric is out here casting Toll the Dead on a creature which is like got 200 hit points or whatever, and two of his party members are down. You know? And so like, it got to the point where last game, I had to give them a cleric. It was like an NPC. This dragonborn showed up as a cleric and they convinced him to join the party. They were like, please, please help us. We're dying.
Focus on your task.
Yeah, honestly. But yeah, but again, I love it because like, I'm totally humbling them every time we play.
Just humble. I'm very harsh between level 1 to 5, and then I loosen up.
No, fair. I think that's a good way to be, though. I think that's a good way to be. I think giving your players a sense of stakes is a great way to invest them in a campaign, generally.
Absolutely.
If they have stakes and they feel like people can die and there's real consequences to their actions, swiftly people suddenly go, oh, I got to switch on now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm like, I'm not going to die.
I may not be the center of this story if I'm dead.
I actually have a question. I have a question
For
you, Nati. I'm curious because both of the campaigns that I've played in that have been module focused, I have usually not enjoyed as much, in part because my character backstory, I don't know what the story of the game is going to be because obviously it's pre-written, but so my character's backstory ends up never having anything to do with what we end up doing. And it often makes me as a player feel very disconnected because I'm like, oh, so it makes me feel like I'm on just sort of a generic adventure. I'm here just to do some stuff for the sake of doing some stuff. Not because I care about it. I was curious, have you encountered your players feeling similarly how do you circumvent that in your games?
Well, because I run the modules, but again, because I'm running this currently, I'm running Avernus. What I sort of did is I kind of scan the thing, scan it once, and then kind of scan it a bit closely again, just getting a sense of like the whole arc of it. And then I was like, well, this is actually rather dull. So I created an NPC that was telling the story to the campaigners, and they'd found these journals. They'd keep finding these journals about information. Oh, okay. So like, I take my module as a guide. I do not run it strictly.
Cool.
Because I also think the way that when they're run strictly are actually kind of boring. So what I'll do is if I feel like an encounter isn't exciting enough, I'll just go into my monster manual and be like, there is a werewolf in there now. As well. They must suffer that. And learn.
Yeah.
They must learn some humility.
This is I'm feeling some strong, powerful mom vibes from this. You must struggle push and fight your way.
My favorite as well, like you threw werewolf in there because you knew that they didn't have silvered or magical weapons yet.
I knew that.
That's why you put it in there because they weren't going to be able to hurt it. Because
I wanted to teach them to run. I didn't want to like... That's the thing is that sometimes I have to balance like... helping them learn how to play the game as people who aren't maybe necessarily as into it as me, mm-hmm. but also like keeping them up to speed so that the game doesn't slow down, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Sometimes I just throw in something that I know they can't defeat to encourage them to run, to know that mm-hmm. like, they don't have to always solve every single encounter. Mm-hmm. They can go back to the pub, have a pint, and make a plan.
Yeah.
Before they just go and guns blazing, thinking that they're badass.
This is so fascinating, actually, because my Thursday group that Jeremy is a part of, I find that really difficult sometimes because these guys are so confident with their own ability. There's very few occasions where I feel like they've ever been like, we might need to run here. And like, I worry about throwing something in with that intention because they'll just try and fight it. And they'll realize when it's too late that, you know, and maybe that's a lesson they need to learn. Maybe that's a lesson they need to learn. So watch out next Thursday, Jeremy.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Jasper, I thought you did a good job of that with the undead beholder that you threw in that one time.
Because
I think in that case it was because you telegraphed up front, this is not like it was essentially in a it was in a clearly
town.
Haunted town.
Yeah,
clearly,
so
haunted.
Clearly haunted. Yeah.
Like I had scouted it out from Snoop's back.
Dennis
and
was fully like, nope, not today.
Yeah,
nothing happened.
We ain't going in there. We ain't going in there. Like no and. It was really funny because that campaign at that time had two black players and one white player. And both black players, upon hearing about the town, were like, nah. And the white player was like, but what if we went
in? There could be treasure.
Y'all can keep the treasure. Yeah.
So,
I'm already out of here, guys. I'm actually sending you a message right now as I'm running away.
So that whole thing was like, he just sauntered in there. I was like a good 120 feet up. Me and Ryan, but it was because of the buildup. There was already a sense of like, this is clearly a very, very dangerous place,
and we
shouldn't be here. You have told us that we shouldn't be here. So if things go bad, I will run immediately. That is exactly what happened. As soon as things went south, Dennis flew away.
Fast
as he could.
I guess it's also how I try to like encourage my players to play their characters, not just their stats.
Yes.
That's why I like to, in John Wright's famous words, I like to put them in the shit because I want to see who they are and not just their capabilities.
What they're made of, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, cool, like find out who you actually are, because then next session they're like, I didn't realize that I was such a coward. I've got to redeem myself.
Yes.
You're learning now. You're humbling yourself.
Yes.
These are the most brutal sounding games.
You
will come to terms with your own weakness.
Yeah, this South African setting that the Inati's gonna run right now, me and Jeremy, 20 minutes into the campaign, I'll be crying like on our hands and knees. Please stop, we can't do it.
No, I'm level one, why are we up against a Tarrasque?
Please.
I have no idea how any of you are going to defeat Shaka Zulu. Good luck. Good luck.
Yeah, because
they are
level 40, 20 levels of sorcerer, 20 levels of wizard. You guys are dead. The spell save is 32 and you are level one. I love this, I have absolutely adored this. I feel like this is probably, we should probably wrap up at some point. I feel like we could probably talk forever, but then we wouldn't have episodes 2 and 3 and 4. I was kind of thinking next week maybe we should dive into some more kind of like personal reasons for playing D&D, like why we play it, why it's important to us. I think that's always a fun one, and ties into our overall theme about kind of black culture as well. So that could potentially be our talking point for next week, and I think we should also definitely dive into some more black creations, and some more South African campaign settings, more Wakandan campaign settings. I'm excited for that. Amazing. So yeah, thank you very much for listening, and we shall hopefully be back next week with another episode. Stay tuned. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Rustled my jimmies.